Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for My Lowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. J.J. Comerford is an author, professional, former service member, and survivor from Australia. In these two episodes, J.J. rawly shares about the physical and sexual abuse he experienced as a student in the private Catholic school system in the 1970s. After decades of suffering in silence, J.J. was eventually encouraged to share about his abuse at large. Since he began his mission of awareness, his media efforts and book have offered much solace to his supporters. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply honored that JJ was willing to so openly share his story, strength, and resilience with our audience.
I was medically discharged from the army. When I reflect on that now, it was a blessing in disguise.
Not long after JJ left the military, his mother became ill, and her health took a turn for the worst.
My mum, when she was dying, she asked me, is there anything that I wanted to know about her or growing up or anything that happened that I wanted to talk to her about? And there wasn't. I mean, I got a lot from my mum being the youngest boy, so I didn't have anything. And I sort of said to her, what do you want to know? And then she said, I really want to know what happened when you were 11. And I said, nothing happened to me when I was 11. She was like, John, I know something happened to you. And I remember saying to her, why didn't you ask me then? And she said, of course I asked you then. I asked you a lot about what was going on with you at the time, but you wouldn't tell me. So please tell me what happened. She said, I just feel like I let you down as a parent because you changed so much. And I said, you didn't let me down. I was blessed to have my mum. And I said that to her, but I didn't tell her at that time. And she passed away about 5 days later. And I was a parent then too. I didn't have children until I was 40. The kids were like 18 months. And that was the start of the spiral because I hadn't told anyone. But her asking me that question and sort of reignited something inside of me. And at that time also in Australia, there was a Royal Commission into Sexual Abuse of Children in Institutions. And there was a famous Australian Cardinal, Cardinal George Pell, and he was named in that. So you couldn't turn on a TV, radio, or look at a computer without there being something about institutional sexual abuse against children. It changed the process for me a bit. It took me to a pretty dark place. And I actually went to try and take my own life, but I had a sliding doors moment where one of my children actually rang while I was waiting to do this, saying that they were getting an award the next day. I've moved out of the home. I was going through a divorce with their mother, and he had said, we really want you to come. We miss you. And I just had this realization. It was like, I'm about to end my pain. But that pain is not going to die with me because my children won't understand why loving them wasn't enough for me to live. And I've spoken to my son about this recently. You know how much I love you? And he said, of course I do. I said, well, I hated myself more than I could love you. That's what I had to get through. And that phone call sent me on a road to recovery, and I was 51. There was a 10-year gap between when mum died and that point where I went to the doctor. My son was around the age where I was. I could see him at that age and started reflecting on that. It was definitely the turning point because I realized I wanted justice. And I went and saw a doctor the next day, told him, I said, I'm going to self-harm. He was sort of saying, why? What's happened? And I'd said, when I was 11, I was raped in a church by a teacher. He said, okay, well, who are you seeing about that? And I said, you're the first person I've ever spoken to about it. I've never said this out loud before. And then I just had this massive outflow of emotion, like 40 years of poured out of me, and I just couldn't stop it. It was that uncontrollable sobbing, snot running out, couldn't catch your breath. It felt like it went on for an hour. I'm not even sure how long it went for. It took me a long time to calm myself, and the doctor that was there stayed with me, saying to me, just get it out. And I slowly recovered from that. He wanted me to go into hospital, and I didn't want to do that. I promised him that I'd been here and this is my first step. And I told him I was there for my children. And this was a small town, so this doctor knew me pretty well and knew the sort of person that I was. He agreed to let me do that as long as I went and saw the visiting psychiatrist in town the next day. But the one thing I did feel when all that was said and done and I walked out and I got in my car, I then had this rush of anxiety hit me. I wasn't expecting it because I felt that I'd be relieved, but I was so anxious now that one other person knew what happened to me and that secret was out. I think that's a problem that a lot of people have. I thought I would say it out loud, I'd be cured and I could just move on with my life. I thought I would get this rush of calmness, all my symptoms, everything that I've been doing for 40 years, the self-sabotage, the mental health problems, alcohol abuse would wash away and I would be cured. And that's just not the case. Where I lived was a remote mining town. So there was visiting psychiatrists. When I first saw my psychiatrist, she asked me a list of these 10 questions. And it was just, have you been married multiple times? Are you self-medicating? Are you in a role like military, police? All these questions, yes or no, I answered them all. And at the end of it, she looked at me and she said, John, I just want to tell you one thing. For a person that had something happen to them at the age that you did, you are completely normal. And I just remember looking at her, crying and saying to her, I never thought that someone would tell me that I was normal because I'd never felt normal. She did some amazing work with some high-profile cases. It was totally luck that I got her, and she was the best person for me. My third marriage by then had broken down. I wasn't seeing my children enough. My ex-partner had taken my children back to Sydney. I then started to fly in, fly out from Sydney to Western Australia, which is a 9-hour flight. And then I had to move back to the other side of Australia. So it was beneficial for me to find someone here that I could deal with. And it started me on that journey. I just needed to sort this out once and for all. And that's when I came out about what really happened to me and did a newspaper article about it. November is all around men's mental health. I did a talk around my mental health, but I used my mum's passing as why I had mental health problems, that I struggled when my mum died, which was not untrue, but not the main cause. And the journalist that was talking to me about that said to me, can I ask you a question? And I said, sure. She said, what really happened to you? And I looked at her and I said, what do you think something else happened? And she went, John, your mum died 10 years ago. And I get you have grief, but I've just got a feeling there's something else. And I looked at her and I said, well, once I tell you, I can't take it back. She said, John, I'm a journalist. I'm up for a story. I said, when I was 11, I was raped. And she asked me some questions about that. We sort of became friends. She then got a job with the biggest newspaper in Sydney. It was about 9 months later, the journalist that was talking to me about that, she rang me and said, just want to ask you a question. What was that teacher's name? And I said, why? And she said, oh, there's this story that I've found. I'm just wondering if there's a correlation between the two. I said, give me 5 minutes. I'll call you back. Then I Googled his name and there was a story that he had done the same thing that he was doing at my school in another school in Melbourne, which is another state in Australia. They caught him and then they moved him to my school. I can't describe the anger that I felt reading that story. And then she called me back and I just said, I can't believe that they've done this. What about all the boys that I went to school with, all the boys that were in his class, because he taught that year five class for 30 years. I said, we should do something here. And she said to me, do you want to do a story about it? And I just said, yes. She went, well, let me come back to you what that looks like. The other thing around that is I've told the psychiatrist about what happened to me, but I haven't even told my family what had happened. So then all of a sudden, I was booked in to do this story, flying back to Sydney. Before I left to get on my flight, I had to ring my father and say, hey, Dad, there's some things I need to tell you. The first thing was, when I was 11, I was raped at school by this teacher. I told him who the teacher was. And by the way, I'm flying to Sydney right now to do a newspaper article, and it's going to be in the Sunday paper. And that's how I told my family. He was shattered. I just remember him saying, I know you think that I'm a Catholic man, but I would never allow anyone to rape my children. And your mother would have burnt that school to the ground. I just don't want you to think you couldn't have told us, because you could have told us. And that's really easy to say now, but when you go back in time to 1975, and what I know now is I wouldn't have been believed. And then I can only imagine what I would have had to go through as a child growing up through that time period when I made a call like that in the community. I did the interview on a Friday, and then on Sunday, it's in the papers. But what I didn't know was I thought it was going to be in the Sydney paper, but it was picked up by all the major newspapers in Australia. The biggest target audience that read it were men between 45 and 60. It became an extremely big story. I was flying back to my job. I was at the airport and they put my face on the front of that newspaper. There was a lady looking at me, smiling at me with a real concerned look on her face, and it just didn't register. Then she said to me, are you okay, John? And I just looked at her and said, yeah, I'm fine, thank you. And she said, I just read your story. And I went, oh, okay, thank you. But then what happened next is over 100 boys from that school came forward as well. So it became a bit of a groundswell movement. And that will always give me immense pride that that story helped other men. And the other part of that newspaper article, all the men who were boys that went from my school started reaching out to me. And you can imagine, I haven't even dealt with this properly at all. And now I have all these people reaching out to me, wanting to talk to me about what happened to them. I just wasn't prepared for that. And that really took a toll on me mentally. I wasn't coping very well. I went back to self-medicating. I was drinking heavily. It was a horrible time for me. Then through that horrible time, I was very fortunate to meet my current partner, Amber. We met at Coogee Beach, where my mum's ashes are. And we found out that her brother and father knew my brother and sister through the building industry. Meeting her was the start of getting my life back together. I remember having this conversation with my sister and just saying, I stayed single for a long time. I was sick of having these secrets. And I said, the next person I meet, I'm just going to tell them everything about me. And when I met Amber, I told her within the first 5 minutes, I just said, there's something I want you to know about me. And I told her, I said, I just don't want it to be a secret, because it was that time where when people met and they'd all Google. And I didn't want her to read a story about me, especially that, without her hearing it from me. And that was the start of our relationship. But as we know, I hadn't dealt with my trauma properly yet. And all of a sudden, I've got this amazing person who wants to help me and throw in all the self-sabotage. And I pushed her to a point where she said, I really love you and I know that you love me, but if you're not going to finally sort it out, she said, not for me, but for you, your children. I was like 55, 56. She said, when are you going to allow yourself to be happy? This is a non-negotiable for me. If you can't sort this out, you need to tell me right now, because if you don't sort this out, you'll never be happy. Therefore, I can't be happy. I said, just give me some time to find some therapy. I just Googled therapy around the area that I lived in. And the very first one came up was narrative therapy. And I didn't understand what that was. So then I Googled narrative therapy and then read that narrative therapy is about writing and changing aspects of your story, because fiction and reality, you can reprogram your brain. That actually resonated with me and sort of got me a little bit excited. I thought, oh, this actually sounds like something that I could do. So I rang her and made an appointment and went in and saw her. She said to me, okay, what I want you to do is every night I want you to write a story about what happened to you, but I want you to change the ending so you're not raped. You can write 8 lines, you can write a page, you can write whatever you like, but I want you to do that every night for a week and then come back and see me. So basically for the first probably 2 months, I just killed him. I mean, I'd spent 20 years in the military, every single way I can think of. He came in, saw me. Instead of raping me, I fought him off, or my brothers had come in. That went on for a little while. And then after, it was probably 3 months, I wrote a story about him actually dying before I started year 5. And when I went to school that first year at high school, I had a female teacher. Therefore, he died. I was never raped. And my school years were great. And my life was great. And then the second story I wrote was my brothers told my parents about the teachers being pedophiles and some incidents that had happened at that school. And my mum pulled us all out of that school and sent us to a different school. So I've taken myself away from that situation. But what I found out was when I was doing these stories, I'd stopped having nightmares. And I was having at least 2 to 3 nightmares a week. And I just saw a real shift real quick in how that was affecting my life. This therapist, she said, John, I'm just going to say this. I actually enjoy the way that you write. You've got a really nice writing style. You should think about writing and keeping this up. And then I found a writing course. Amber could see the improvement as well. And I said to her, I think I'm going to write about what happened to me. I'm not going to write it as in it's my bio. I'm going to turn it into a dark romantic comedy, but I'm going to write the book for you. And the book's going to be about us and our love story and how you've helped me. And it took 3 years. And then I wrote Tarzan Loves Jane. And that book is dedicated to Amber, who got me through that. Writing that book became the best therapy that I could ever have, because I had 3 years of writing what had happened to me. The chapter in the book where I was raped, I've probably read that or rewritten that over 100 times. When you're doing that over and over and over and over, it's just nothing to me now. And it's because I had all that therapy writing Tarzan Loves Jane. It's just been amazing for me. And the one thing I didn't want the book to be was this sad story. And I wanted to make it funny. People who have been through trauma, we overcompensate. We don't want to be sad all the time. So I wanted to sort of join all these things in and on one page have the reader cry about something, but then 2 pages later, have them laugh about something else, because that's the real life of someone who's been through childhood trauma. Humor got me through my life a lot. When my story came out and people had known me a long time, whether it's been as a child or my military career or even my career after the military, the first thing they say is, you would have never have guessed that this has happened to you. You're always sort of cracking jokes. Like, I've always been a bit of a smart ass. I don't take anything too serious. that's just one of those coping mechanisms that I use to get through life. The power of the media, I didn't recognize straight away how powerful that can be, for good and for bad. When the book started to be released, I had a lot of people contact me who had similar stories. So where before, when I did the newspaper article, I wasn't mentally or emotionally ready to deal with that stuff. I was here armed with all the tools to help as many people as I can. I'd have people contact me, ask me about narrative therapy, or there's a very good organization here called SAMHSN, which is Survivors and Mates Support Network, who help men deal with their childhood sexual abuse. The other thing that I found when I started talking about this is how quickly my social media grew. I'll do a post and there's a lot of people who have similar stories who have joined that movement to try and get it out there. The one thing that I found the most positive in social media is I can talk about how I feel or how I felt and what steps I needed to take along the way. People will hear that and that will give them some sort of step they have to make themselves, because having the courage and conviction to take the first step to speak about what happened to you is the hardest step that we need everyone to make. And the power of social media and media help with that, because the more people see me, and I'm just average Joe, if I can do it and I'm speaking about it, it'll help other people doing it. And I have noticed a big shift around men's mental health and victims of assault crimes growing in the level of support. The down part of that is it's really easy for people in the background to throw mud without consequences. But I found that people who follow me police and jump on that stuff before I have to do anything. The thing that I wish people would see is when I sit here and talk to you or I do a clip for Insta, I wish they'd see the 11-year-old me. I wish they see the little boy, not the six-foot man standing in front of you.
For anyone listening that has related to any portion of your journey, what words of wisdom or advice do you have?
Just please speak up. If anyone who's listening to me right now hears this, if you are suffering, you've been through something painful that is making you upset, or you're not sleeping at night, or whatever it is, go to someone who loves you and tell them how you're feeling. Courage and conviction to speak up is the hardest thing that you have to do. But once those words came out, especially if you're talking to people who love you, they will support you and get you through it. You mightn't feel better the next day, but you'll feel better in a month, and then you'll feel better in a year, and you'll feel better in 5 years. The relationship that I have with Amber, I would never have had that relationship if I didn't go and get the help I needed 3 years ago. I'm more open spiritually than I probably ever have been. And I try to enjoy my life every day. I do a lot of things to set myself up for the day. Like, I'm very lucky, as I live close to a beach. I go to that beach every morning. I set myself up to make sure that I'm a better human, not just for myself, but for my children and my beautiful partner, Amber. I tell her everything, how I'm feeling. I don't keep it inside at all. A month ago, I was sitting at this table. A song came on from my childhood. I just started crying. It just came from nowhere. Of course, Amber saw that and was straight over and like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I said, oh, it's this song. She just sat here with me and we got through it. And then when we got into the car about an hour later, because the song was on my phone, it came through the car radio and she went to turn it off. And I said, Amber, like, I love this song. I don't want to cry every time that song comes on. And I'm happy to have this moment with you here because I know we'll get through it and I don't have to worry about it ever again. There's so much power in that. And I'm blessed to be able to have her. Talking out loud about it takes that power away from it. Hiding it gives it power. I think about that a lot. So every time I have a thought or a feeling or someone says something to me and it makes me anxious, then I question them and I don't have to worry about it.
I appreciate everything you've given our listeners today. Where can people find you?
I'm on Insta and Facebook, so it's JJ Comerford. I'm on LinkedIn as well. All my links are on the webpage, jjcomerford.com. The book's available on Amazon. All the books are linked in there. I update it regularly about what I'm doing. I'd love to connect with anyone who wants to connect with me. I think it's a wonderful thing that we've got at our fingertips to be able to help each other. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Amy. So thank you.
In 2012, the Australian Prime Minister recommended the launch of a royal commission to be appointed to investigate institutional responses to child abuse. That commission commenced at the beginning of 2013. On December 15, 2017, the Royal Commission presented their final report, detailing the culmination of a five-year inquiry into institutional responses to child sexual abuse and related matters. To this day, it remains to be one of the largest public inquiries into institutional child abuse internationally. Although exactly accurate statistics are relatively impossible to gather considering the covert nature of sexual abuse, the commission heard from 7,981 child sexual abuse survivors and also received 1,344 written accounts. The statistics gathered from those accounts were shocking. Almost 2 in 3 survivors were male. 58.1% of survivors said the abuse took place in an institution managed by a religious organization. Of those who shared with the commission that they were abused in a religious institution, 61.4% said they experienced abuse in a Catholic church institution. Testimonies collected highlighted abuse across 964 Catholic institutions, such as churches, religious schools, and children's homes. The commission found that several factors contributed to conditions conducive to abuse. One was the remote locations of some church institutions in Australia, which distance perpetrators from accountability and victims from methods for reporting. Another factor was the religious relationship between perpetrator and victim, with children, quote, often being blamed in theological terms for their own abuse. It was found that some victims were even threatened with being sent to hell if they resisted, end quote. Still, sexual abuse prevalence in Australia within religious organizations, particularly of boys, has declined. However, additional measures are still needed to continue to prevent abuses. Continuing social education, increased resources, and consistent adjudication of abusers are just some methods of abuse reduction. If you or someone you know is a victim of child sexual abuse, resources can be found through the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network website at rainn.org or in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
They knocked me to the ground. I tried to stand up. They pushed me back down. And then they started kicking and stomping on me. At some point, I was knocked unconscious and they kept stomping on my body. About a little less than a year, I get a call from the LAPD and they let me know that they had found the individuals who did this to me and they arrested them. The courts got in touch with me to ask if I would like maximum sentencing for them. I recognize this is my opportunity to make a transitional change from who I was to who I want to become.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.